Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode number 110 of the Apologue Podcast. I am your host, Simon Head. My son is in the background. Say hi, Everett.
Hello.
There he is. This episode is brought to you in part by audibletrial.com. Go to audibletrial.com/apologue and choose from over 180,000 titles of books on tape. Do they still call them books on tape? I don't know, but you can go there and find out. Get your free 30-day trial and an audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/apologue. Go there. There's tons of stuff. It's fun. Also, please support my affiliate program through Amazon by going to apologue.ca and click on the banners located on the right side. Look at your country, whether it's Canada, the United States, or the UK. Click on those banners, bookmark the banners, and every time you shop on Amazon, use those things to support the show. Costs you no extra money, and it's tremendous help to me and the show. Thank you. I can see that when people actually go buy stuff. Yeah. So don't buy anything funky. Know what I'm saying? Also, if you want to help the show out and support on a monthly base, on a monthly basis, go to patreon.com/apologue. You can pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with my hosting and gas fees. Ding! You can cancel at any time, and I have four awesome patrons. Why don't you go there and be a fifth? Be a fifth patron on my Patreon campaign. Go, like I say, go to patreon.com/apologue. Pledge a buck. Pledge $4. Pledge $10. But you get surprises and rewards if you pledge more and more per month. If you're rich and you like giving to podcasts, then go to patreon.com/apologue. Also, this podcast is brought to you in part by Insight Recorders. Insight Recorders deals with a few things. One is that it's an actual brick-and-mortar studio where bands can come and record. It's also a mobile recording studio where I can come to you and record in your place. It's a live remote recording studio, which means it can set up in a club, in a venue, in a theater, anywhere, and record. If you also want to have your record mixed online, you can go to apologue.ca and check out the rates. Go to Apple, like I said, go to insightrecorders.com. More rates and details there. If you're interested in purchasing a t-shirt, go to apologue.ca/shop. And if you want to pre-order an album that I'm working on, go there. If you want to buy Foursquare discography, it's $20. You buy from there, it's a deal. It's like 70-something songs. Okay, don't forget also to go to iTunes to rate and review the show. Give it 5 stars, please. If you, put a little comment in there. It's always helpful and it helps the show out that way. Follow the show on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/apologuepod. And follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666. And that's all the bits. Today's show is my friend Greg Bolton. Greg Bolton and I work together with a band called Small Town Pistols. He's a guitar tech. He's not just a guitar tech, but he's a super smart and swell dude to hang out with. He is, I consider him a friend. And he's a fun guy to talk to. And please, everybody, enjoy this episode. My friend Greg Bolton and me on the Apologue Podcast. You know what?
What?
I got my fifth action cam today.
Oh yeah, really?
Yeah.
Amazing. Like, is it the same brand as the other ones? Like the quote unquote cheap?
No, it's model? Actually it's called SJ Cam. I mean, no, it's not called an SJ Cam. Those are my four other ones. It's called a Wimius. It's super.
Okay.
It's super not like it's cheap. It was $90. Does 4K video. It's I got it on Amazon, and it actually didn't take that long to come from China.
So, oh, nice!
And it sounds and looks pretty good. It does weird things, like it looks funky with irising. Like none of these cheap ones really do irising that well.
No, well, I mean, you're paying whatever the cost of something like that. You're just being able to get the image is good enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, I used my 4 on this little thing I did a couple of days ago, and it does not work very well inside with low light. It's
cheap sensors.
Yeah. But what are you going to, oh, I mean, well, it looks great outside. And if we, you know, when we do in these festivals, they look pretty damn good.
But, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we're started already.
Oh, okay. Awesome. I'm going to un-FaceTime because I can hear two of you here.
Oh, okay. You're going to drop away. There you go.
Yeah, there. Well, you weren't able to see my face anyway.
I
right?
saw your face a little bit, but it was delayed.
It's enough. It's enough for one night.
You know. You know, I want to start a podcast with you, and I want to call it Smart Guy, Dumb Guy. I've been thinking about it.
Can you play like a ridiculous character, like a character, not just Simon?
No, I'll be the dumb guy. You be the smart guy. And then when it's something that you don't know, I'll be the smart guy, and then you can be the dumb guy.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay. So we don't actually have a persona. It is what.
No,
it is.
No, I'm not going to wear a hat with a propeller on the top. That's not my.
no dunce cap.
Or I could.
Exactly. Hey, it could be just a shtick. The whole thing is just shtick.
I'm the dumb guy, you know. I'm the smart guy. Hey, smart guy, tell me about stuff, you know. Okay.
Here's some stuff that I know.
You could be super smart, and then we can somehow cross the lines. I always thought it'd be kind of funny to do one of those shock jock little radio buddy.
Like the dick and butt kind of deal?
Yeah, like back sack and fat back. I don't know. In the morning.
Fat sack.
Big sack.
Fat sack and fat back.
Big sack and the balls are on the morning radio drive.
Big sack in the shaft.
We got traffic coming up. It's big sack. Oh, am I big sack or am I big balls? I don't know. I can't remember it anymore.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No, in the end, it doesn't matter.
In the end. See?
There in the go. End. Exactly.
I can already see a logo coming up. No, but I want to make a smart guy, dumb guy video, or sorry, a podcast where... Because you're tremendously knowledgeable in the art of creating sound systems, like how that works, and I like to mix on them. So somehow our career paths are like completely
they've
different.
Melded together.
No, but they're different.
Well, they've melded together. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're usually the one sort of making it all sort of look or work, and then I'm the one that breaks it.
Exactly. But we make sure that we make it so you can't break it.
That's right.
Hence, but your job is to try to break it, which is exciting.
Yeah.
You got to live for something, right?
Yeah. And I'll be dumb guy. I'll be dumb guy. You'd be smart guy. We actually don't even use names because it doesn't matter because I'm dumb guy. No, you'd be smart guy.
And if we switch roles, it doesn't matter because who cares?
That's right. And you know, these podcasts that have like things like bits, they have segues and they have like a, you know, here's the bit where we talk about this. Like, we should really make it so it's super that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, we have, like, the bit, like, tell me about the food you had last night, smart guy, you know, or something, you know. Or, you know, this is the bit where we talk about Survivor.
Is that even a show still?
It's just the thing, you know. I would like to do that.
I think that would be fun. It'd be a fun adventure. To just, you know, come up with the most ridiculous topics and then,
yeah,
obviously run with it.
And then the other thing is we could both be dumb guys. We could get a smart guy on the show who is really smart at other things.
Yes, yes. I like that. So you bring in the guy that knows all of the stuff. And that even, like, it'd be hilarious to get, you know, somebody that knows something about something we have absolutely no idea what it does,
and just ask, the
and then we just try
questions.
To exactly. But we also start the show off with talking about it like we know exactly what it is, and then he comes on and corrects us and says, "Well,
somehow we'll get like American politics or something. We'll get somebody who's like got a master's degree in American politics, and we're like somehow coerce them into the show to come in and do it, and then we could just." Prank on them the whole time, like so you guys, so but it, you know, it's got to be intelligent enough where it kind of sounds like we know what we're talking about, and it's got to
be it's not like you know, blue collar humor. It's more like, you know, try to push the boundaries of hilarity by acting aloof, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yeah, we could do that. That'd be fun. I could do that. This could be a whole podcast of coming up ideas for new podcasts.
We got three already.
I know. We got the go ahead.
Just in the course of this like 10 minutes, we've now become superstars in our own mind.
That's right. Did I mention how good your microphone sounds on my recording? It sounds like you're in the room with me.
Well, I wish I was in the room with you this evening.
You don't want to be in this hoarder's hall. I'm redoing my basement, and it's really messy in here right now. Let me pan around here. I know this is good pod for people at home, but that's a mess.
Oh yeah, okay.
Look at that.
So basically everything that was in the basement is now in that room.
Yeah, it's up here. And this is actually amazing. Where my wife's supposed to work, and then I've commandeered it to be in my new podcast studio. And my son's my son's bedroom is like literally right next door. And sometimes people call in from like 11:30 at night because they're on West Coast time, and it's the only time they can do it. So I'm like, hey, how's it going? that's hilarious.
It's NPR. It's NPR.
Yeah, it gets into a nighttime radio voice guy. But
now, as I sip this tea.
Yeah, hold on a second. I can't drink too fast and loud in here because I got someone sleeping next door.
So let's talk about
Night Tribe. There's another. You heard all Steely Dan's first first album, front to back, Asia. No, that's not Asia. That wasn't front to back. That wasn't even the first Steely Dan record. You see, I don't know what I'm talking about.
He gave me another idea of playing a record, like choosing an iconic record, like, you know, Rumors or something.
Yep.
And then in the break, talk about how it was written, but not remotely close to the actual facts. You know, and just play on the words and try to figure out a way, like, oh, well, this is obviously written when Stevie was, she was high on.
She's taking butt tokes.
She was taking butt tokes. Yeah, exactly.
Cocaine with up her butt.
Vodka killers at the end. and she came up with this lyric.
There's another, actually, we could a whole part of that. We could decipher the lyrics that Stevie Nicks is supposedly singing. Because she's like, and then the liner above. What? What's she singing about? For some reason, my wife knows every word to those songs, and I'm like, I have no idea what she's singing about. Like, it just sounds like a bunch of
noises.
Like,
it'd be nice to interpret. You know, mm-hmm. you sing the line from the song, and I try to interpret, and vice versa, what the actual line said.
Yeah,
and or we just play it, and, you know, listen to the playback, and then think hard.
Yeah,
what did she just say?
I think she's fixed her problem, though, because when she was on that Dave Grohl documentary, Sound City, you could hear, you couldn't understand what she was talking about. But when she, early Fleetwood Mac days, you're like, you could be singing about racial tension or how much, whatever, how you hate races, but I don't know what you're singing about, lady.
Well, cocaine's a hell of a drug, so.
Especially when it goes up your butt.
Exactly. So,
allegedly.
You heard it first here.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
You ever had cocaine up your butt?
I personally have not, no.
Oh, not on purpose.
No. I mean, I have fallen asleep in a van or on a tour bus a few times. Mm. So,
and woken up a little funky feeling in your butt?
Well, it was weird. I went on, you know, I would go to bed with my pants on, and then for some reason I thought maybe I was, you know, a tosser and a turner.
Mm-hmm.
So
more
I would
of a tosser.
That, oh,
then.
My. Oh, well, in the end, literally, in the end, the tosser, it was, you know, my pants didn't just miraculously fall off. They were, you know, they were commandeered, if you will.
Well, you know, what goes in the road stays in the road. What goes in your butt stays in your butt.
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
So how you been doing? What you been working on, man? Because you're a busy guy. You've been doing all sorts of crazy things in your life. You been installing any PA systems anywhere?
We just finished Massey Hall. We've heard some really good feedback from that. It's a D&B rig, so it sounds pretty awesome in there. It's been a long time since Massey's had a rig,
an actual rig. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they were basically a roadhouse for a long time where they would just rent, or whoever was coming in would bring their own rig. And I guess they figured out, you know, what was the most asked for on the rider, and we installed that, and it sounds great. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, that's only one quarter of the work that my company does. I'm doing a lot of corporate facilities at the moment. You know, boardrooms and divisible spaces and you know, working through all that stuff. It sounds boring, but it's pretty complex when you want to. You know, every corporate client wants to outdo the other corporate client, and they want to have the best rooms in the city. And our job is to try to bring that to fruition for them and give them a great space. So,
and there's a lot of construction going on too. So there's the ability to retrofit your building with the newest, greatest technology too.
Yeah. And like it or love it, the wonderful government has been giving a lot of money towards construction in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. And it's going to continue on more along in the education sector. So you'll see more and more construction and upgrades and all that latest and greatest stuff. It's exciting because, you know, everybody learns differently. And now incorporating that in the educational market is amazing to see and to hear the feedback, you know, that people have, they've grown from this type of education or this way of learning, as opposed to, you know, the 80-year-old with the horn rim glasses at the front of the room, you know, talking about the War of 1812. It's good that she was there because, you know, she was a part of the war, at least at that point. So
she's
getting real fast.
She's to stoke the cannon with that stokey thing, like
the cannon pick, we'll call it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, especially in the city of Toronto. It's there's a lot of construction going on and a lot of condos and a lot of office buildings. Mm-hmm. It's an exciting time for especially for technology, the way that it progresses daily. And you know, we love clients that, you know, we don't want to be on the bleeding edge, but we like to be, you know, close enough where we're pushing the boundaries and trying to make something, you know, incredible compared to just, you know, lackadaisical, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the normal office or the
You want to be the super office. Yeah, the super.
You want to be super office.
Yeah. When you're saying all these things, what really comes to my head is that we're all like, the society is turning into visual learners, or visual people learn by sight as opposed to memory, because when I went through the school system, we memorized stuff. And that's how we got through school, is memorizing. And then they started changing the teaching ways. And it must have just been really ramped up once we got into like computers in the classroom, iPads for every kid. People learn now. Like, they learn completely different. Like, I go to my son's school and look at stuff, and there's nothing remotely similar to the old guard.
Right, where it's not just textbooks in the room anymore. Yeah. There's the whiteboard and the smart board.
That's the thing. It's like, what? The thing reads your writing and puts it on the... What? How does that work? That really is smart.
It's in the name, right?
Yeah, smarter than the teacher that runs it.
You know, and as a dad, this is an interesting topic, because do you think that your son is learning at the potential that he needs to, or is he... I don't want to say hindered by the technology, but is he learning at a different pace than maybe you and I did, where we had to, you know, put our nose in the book and really understand the topics. And I understand everybody learns differently, but is it coddling? Are we coddling at this point in the education system where it's like,
I think they
don't have to learn how to spell because,
you know,
text messages help with that. And I don't have a child yet. So I just interested in how you feel about that.
I think that ever since my son was in grade one, his version of grade one seemed like my version of grade three.
I see.
When we were in kindergarten.
Escalated.
Yeah. When we were in kindergarten, we were playing with blocks. It was daycare. You know,
right?
Yeah, I remember, like, when I was in kindergarten. I remember being 5 years old. I remember, like, the coolest thing would be like rubbing your feet on the carpet and then shocking people. Like, that was exciting stuff. You know,
the simple things.
Yeah, this, and we had like weird little like things to sit on, and it wasn't really a classroom. And then, you know, cut to 40 years later, and here is, you know, Everett learning, like, essentially. They're preparing them whether they're going to go to the French side of school or the English side of school. And that was preparation, like, and very, and I understand, you know, sometimes when they say, oh, the teachers and this and that, but they're teaching in a much different level than, say, our teachers taught at, you know, maybe, you know. So to answer it, I think they're escalating them to the point where at one point I was going, okay, they're just kids. Let them be kids for a while. Like, stop
it. They're losing that sense of childhood, basically, by hitting the books.
Yeah. So like homework, in grade one, like stuff like that. And at that point, I like discipline. I like that. But I think kids should be kids for a while, right?
Oh, of course. But I mean, we're not going to answer that now, but when is the right time for, you know, the sponge of learning discipline? You know, not that this happens all the time, but there's a lot of people out there now who expect to get a job and expect to get paid a certain amount of money and expect. However, you know, if you haven't worked hard, you're not going to succeed, I guess, is really what it comes down to it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Levels of success are very, you know, completely varied. And don't get me wrong that you have to be a multi-million dollar, you know, stockbroker to be happy or to succeed. But for your own level of happiness, you know, I don't know if coddling is really the answer or not letting them have the consequence of failure. You know, that's sort of kind of how you learn a little bit.
Yeah.
And you don't want, and I think like we didn't want to fail because we didn't want to, you know, we didn't want to be left back a grade.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to disappoint our parents but we didn't just let it happen. We worked for it. So we didn't have to do that because all of our friends would graduate and then we wouldn't be in the same class again.
Yeah, but definitely. It was definitely a big shame. There was a few students in my public school that were got left behind a grade. One was in my grade and one was in a grade above me. And then, you know, we come into grade four again and there's that person that was in grade five and the other, that was in grade four and then they're back. There's a level of shame. I don't think they do that anymore. I think they'll say, if you want your child to go into the next grade, then they got to take this course, that course, and the other course, and then we'll push them through.
Not that I'm speaking from you know, any real experience, but you know, and don't get me wrong, you know, failing younger grades is not really the argument here. It's when they're old enough to know better,
mm-hmm.
and not holding them back. This has gone way off topic now, but
yeah, no, I like this is good. This is the show.
You know, taking somebody who, you know, who knows better, you know, grade 7, grade 8, grade 9 even, and just because the curriculum tells them that they're not allowed to hold them back, what happens when those people get out in the workforce and their boss says, you need to get this done, and then they're basically their whole high school career, they may have slacked,
mm-hmm.
and now they find themselves without a job when it could have just been rectified by maybe, and I hate the word fear, but the, you know, for lack of a better word, the fear of getting left behind and disappointment on your own accord. I mean, you don't have to go to school to you know, to make your dad or mom happy or whatever, your grandparents happy. You have to be happy yourself. But I think that there has to be some sense of disappointment if you're really not, you know, pushing yourself to be, like, you can't just go through life and expect to get a job at the end of it and not work hard. And then everything that you learned in high school about not working hard and getting pushed forward is now when you get out into the workforce,
yeah,
you don't understand the hard portion of it.
Yeah.
And I'm of course speaking completely out of turn because I'm not a teacher and I don't have children, but I do have friends that are teachers and we do discuss this kind of stuff. And, you know, with a child on the way, I maybe I'm thinking too far into the future, but at the same time, you know, things like not learning cursive and not learning how to spell because it doesn't matter because you'll spell check is something that, I mean, my wife and I both agree that is asinine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something that, you know, in our household, I don't care really what the curriculum has to say, but I think that's important. You know, you can't sign for your deed. You can't sign for a car if you don't know cursive. You can't, you know, you can't sign on the dotted line for your job. You can't. So I don't know if it's, I always go back to the word coddling or entitled or something along those lines that it's kind of scary.
My son has learned cursive.
That's good.
The basics of it. Not like we did though. Like, where there was an actual form done to it, and then you could get your own thing going after a while when it came to cursive, and you could sort of mix it up if you wanted to.
Right.
I have so many thoughts on that, you know, and but what you were just talking about, I mean, I think what you're, who you're, like, I think what happened is people between, so I became a parent in 2003. Whoever was a parent in the sort of the mid-90s, whoever had children at that time, they came from a family that was from the 70s. And the 70s was sort of a depressing time for people. Like, there was just a thing, you know, socioeconomically depressing. And parents were working their ass off. And they're paying like 24% tax on their house income or property tax, or sorry, tax for their mortgage. You know, people were depressed and everybody was working, and families and parents were kind of like disconnected because families were working and the kids were left, and you have latchkey kids. And that's sort of where that was invented. That sort of whole, that whole term was a kid can just go to school, come home, feed themselves. And, you know, and I think the reaction in the mid 90s when people had kids who are now, you know, is the complete opposite of that. Because when you become a parent, you kind of try to change the circle of your family.
Right, I see. Yeah.
But you always end up somehow, for better or worse, come back into that circle. So all the good things that you learn from your parents, you're going to put into your kids, and that's great. But all the things that you didn't like, you're going to say, I did not agree with that, and this is why. So it was sort of, I think, you know, a general movement for parents to say, I'm not going to be like that. My kid is going to be the most important thing in my life. This is going to be the be-all and end-all to my child. So I'm going to take that kid to hockey. I'm going to be there at the soccer game. I'm going to pay for every all karate outfits, and I'm going to do everything. And my kid is going to be the most special thing. And cut to 2003, and they're in university, or 2006. And this person is a monster.
Right.
Fucking monster. This person has been told their whole life that they're the most important thing on earth. And you know, and I put no thought into it at all. No, I've been thinking long and hard about this. And I think what it is a reaction to what your parental life was before. So I think you'd find out, like, if you spoke to, say, 9 out of these 10 kids, I bet you they had really awful grandparents. You know,
I see. Okay. Yeah. Because it sort of perpetuates down the line.
And I think that's what it is. But what's the problem and the fallout from that is that people now are going to be graduating university who were born in their mid 90s. And these people are going to be exactly what you're talking about. They won't be able to get a job. They need constant affirmation. They need to be told how good of a job they're doing, you know. And if you tell them they're doing a bad job, then you're bullying them. So, and this is where we're at. This is what's happening.
You got to get kicked down at least a few times. I mean,
yes,
there's so many friends of mine who you know, had it rough, you know, growing up and all that stuff, or even in their adult years, and you just look at them now and how amazing that they're doing is solely based on the
failure
wants and not to fail and I commend that to you know that they pushed as hard as they did to get where they wanted to go. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to be at the top of the list of everything. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, if you don't aspire to do that, then what's the point? I mean, you may never get there, but at least you're trying to get there.
Sure. And with today's technology and everybody can do whatever they want to do, it should be utopia. Like, it should be like, if I want to go out and start a shoelace company, I can do that. And I will do
exactly.
That. You know, it gives an example to all those microbreweries out there. It's like, well, I can make beer. People drink beer. I'm going to make a microbrewery.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and next thing you know it, you're making a brewery. That's where we live in now, where before it was unreachable. Like, stuff like that was like, I don't think I could do that. That's beyond...
You don't think you could afford it, nor do you think you could have had the money to sustain yourself.
The smarts, right? You know?
Yeah.
And if
you had to work, you know...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, you know, you had to... you know, work into the norm in order to be somewhat successful, you know, and I agree with you that it's amazing that there's so many people that have their own businesses and are thriving based on their businesses. And then there's others that don't, but they also were learning at the time
yeah,
and learning how to succeed or how to fail. Because the whole time owning that business, they weren't, you know, people aren't thinking about, you know, I don't care about this job. I don't care about my company. They're mm-hmm. busting their ass, and yeah. they comes down to not wanting to fail. Full yeah. circle. We've just gone full circle back to the don't yeah. want to fail.
And when being an entrepreneur is all about failing, like you can't
exactly,
you're going to make 100 mistakes or 100 bad ideas before you come up with one idea that might work. And
exactly.
that is, and I think, I really think and hope, and I'm not really tuned in to the 20-year-old, but I feel right. like if I was 20 in this age, it's kind of like if I knew what I knew then now kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, I wish, you know, it's the thing, because I've seen them all. I've seen the part, I've seen people who, it's very slowly becoming a rarity to see people who are like outgoing or to the part of like they can take direction, and they can take it from an elder to say, you know, hey, if you do it this way, it's going to be better, you know. And then you get the, okay, old man, you know, it's like, well,
right.
I'm just trying to tell you the right way to do it.
They've had experience.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's,
yeah.
I'm sure you might see that at the theater. I mean, maybe not now, but in your career, you know, being a guy who's experienced like yourself, you're going to have, you know, apprentices, you're going to have guys under you.
Yeah.
Well, and how often does it happen that the person that wants to work hard to get where they need to go, like is that gone? Do you still see that happening in your experience? Are you seeing the young guys coming up and really pushing hard, and when something doesn't go their way, do they, you know, get out, or do they continue to work harder to impress? I mean, you're going to screw up. I mean, nobody's perfect, right? So
I see people who are, I know I've worked with people who are terribly talented, but they're just too young to realize how to use it or how to parlay it into something,
right?
Which is great, because if they're super talented, then they can stay work with me for a while until they figure out what it is to what they want to do in life.
Right.
And I've worked with people who are lifers, you know, both places, you know, like my other job too. I've seen, you know, it's so hilarious. Like, I'm kind of glad I got out of York when I did, because I was working alongside people that have been wearing for 20 years and they just look dead inside, you know?
Right.
They just look
so
dead.
It was just sort of the end. They're waiting for
they're just waiting to retire, you know, and
punch clock kind of idea.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Now there's another thing. I've had this conversation before. It's like some people, this new age of like, I'm going to make me happy. I'm going to do stuff that makes me, I'm going to work and I'm going to be happy. And what if I'm happy, I'm going to succeed and, you know, and just, I'm going to take the world on, you know, where in the olden days, nobody liked their job. Nobody.
You're just doing it for your family.
You're doing it. You're making a sacrifice to put bread on food and on the table to do that. But then I think when we turned into double income families, it became easier for the other half to go, you know what? I'm going to live for me. I'm going to do this. But it's like, there's a sense of delusion, deludedness there, or being deluded enough to think that it'll just happen. You know, this is just
right.
The gods will make it happen.
I think that good stuff does happen to people that are good and have worked for it. Hmm. And it kind of seems like it comes out of nowhere for those on the outside. However, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that there's a successful person out there. And again, back to successful in your own right, whatever you think is successful. But I don't think that any successful person out there was a shitty person. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't start out as a shitty person. They wouldn't have gotten where they were if they were a shitty person. Now, they may eventually get into that realm as they're going along, because then they get money hungry and blah, 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 blah. But that's like, that's a too deep of a topic that I can't really talk about too much, because I don't really know enough about it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's, I don't know.
I think that there's shitty people out there that are successful, and they got successful because they're shitty. And I'm not naming, I'm like, a, you know what I mean? I'm just naming a specific type of person that I've worked with, who you're like, I can't believe you are where you were at, Matt Good. Wait, did I just name names? I just named names. Regard Matt Good. I can't, you know, but there's people out
Command
there.
X.
edit that part out. No, don't edit it out. Matt Good's a git. He's a dick. So people out there like that who are successful on one single or early on in their career, I wonder what that person's like now. Maybe they're a better person because they got been put into check a few times. Like, this is a guy, Matt Good, who we're sitting at Kingswood Music Theater on this pathway on the way, you know, and on up from his dressing room. His roadie made us all stand on the grass while he walked by. Like, what? Yeah, that was not long ago. So that guy's a shitty person, yet he's successful. And if people knew him as a person, they might not like his music as much.
You know, and maybe I'll play a little devil's advocate here, is that, you know, sort of to my argument that he may be monetarily successful and have, you know, big songs, but is he happy, and would he consider himself successful? Because if you're still a shitty person, you obviously are not happy with something. So how can you sustain feeling like you're successful?
Well, you can perpetuate the myth on how horror or how dark you are as a person to help you write your songs. Like, you can feed yourself all that as much crap as you want to say that, hey, you know, this is me, this is my image I'm trying to sell, or this is the image that I've been perpetuating.
Right.
So, like, this guy Matt Good, he's thrown guitars at his tech, like overhand. Like, this is
That's
a person.
A good whip.
Yeah. You know, there's certain things that if he did that to me, I might hit him with his own guitar. The things that are just morally wrong, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think you can get away with stuff like that in life. And that will eventually, and I truly believe that things balance out, and he'll be a lonely 60-year-old dude who had a life, you know?
Just, you know, or flip side, maybe he
will be enlightened.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. Mm. I mean,
just hope for him.
You know, yeah, exactly. And that's really where I'm coming from, is that the hope of, you know, maybe regretting his previous ways that you've talked about, and maybe he'll see the light, yeah, or something. I don't know.
Here's another Matt Good. I don't know why I have so many Matt Good stories tonight, but Matt Good, a friend of mine's band was opening up for them, and I was doing sound, and the guy who was their touring guy said, turn it down. Matt doesn't like the opener act this loud. He's like, what? Okay. Really? So I'm too loud? Because what is Matt worried about? You know? I'm going to bust their ears out before. And it wasn't even that loud. You know? I don't know.
Is it necessary?
Is it necessary? That is, in fact, the question. Because, right, you know, we've worked for people who are the exact opposite of that. And that gives me hope.
Of course.
You know, that gives me hope that there's people out there who actually care. They have some empathy to the other side. And, you know, and it's always said, like, people like Mick Jagger, he's probably the coolest guy ever. Why? Because he's done everything he wants to do in life.
Exactly. You know, to your point before. Now he's just riding it out and having fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a lot of shitty times. And,
oh, yeah.
And maybe it was outside of him as a person, but just pressure and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, maybe.
But he might be the golden child of our conversation, of saying, well, maybe at one point he was kind of a dick. Who knows? I mean, I don't know. But and then now I've heard he's incredible backstage. He's a sweet, sweet, sweet man. Him and Keith are both.
Yeah.
And Ronnie, they're all, you know, really nice people backstage. And
we're Brian and Adams. You can't look him in the eye. Don't look Brian Adams in the eye. Why? You can steal all the talent out of my eyes, man. That's what it's going to do.
And in 10 years, maybe the success, as we're talking about, dwindles.
Yeah.
And then you realize, okay, well, I was only successful because of X, Y, and Z. But, you know, point A, I was a douche. So now I got to fix that. And then I can increase my career back again to something that it was before.
But it might be too late. It might be too late.
Exactly. I mean, if you burn... You know, my dad always taught me never to burn a bridge, because you never know when you're going to need it, you know? And
yeah,
it doesn't matter how much of a dick somebody is. I don't think that it's necessary, because it's so much more effort for you to react.
Yeah. It's so, you know? It's so exhausting. It hurts, but... Being a dick is exhausting. Like,
yes.
Not, I mean, okay, I had my own time of being a dick. And that was when I was recording every band under the sun, and they were coming in. I was hearing all the same bad mistakes and all the same cliche songs. And hey, come to Inside Recorders, everybody. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. But of course, there was times that there was a name coming out, getting out about me. About, hey, he's not very fun to work with. Well, I'm not fun to work with. I'm frustrated. I hate recording all these shitty bands.
You became a little bit jaded.
But
that's not what you wanted to do at the time.
No.
And that's why you were sort of...
Yeah. Well, maybe I did. You know, maybe I did, and I got into it and went, you know what? This isn't as cool as I thought it was going to be. You know, right. Okay, there's... And maybe I wasn't appreciating the positive sides of it. But I mean, honestly, what you were saying before is that, you know, you surely do meet the same people on the way up that you do on the way down. That is true.
Sure.
And I'm reacquainting myself with a kid who was my studio assistant who manages bands. And
right.
He's giving me a crack at things that I would never be able to get in the door. Why?
Right.
And I must have not been a dick to him.
Exactly. You scratch mine, I'll scratch yours, you know? And that's the bridge burn. Mm. And as his employer, you had all the ample opportunity to burn that bridge with him and ride him and make him hate his life. But mm-hmm. maybe you saw the potential in him, and guess what? Now it's paying off. It's paying yeah. off that you were, you know, cordial or whatever. Everybody's an asshole. Don't get me wrong. Everybody yeah. has their time. I'm an asshole. So
yeah.
Just how often does it come out? Can you reel it back in?
What I notice with people, sometimes I work with people and they project back to me what they are. So one case in point, somebody is running something wrong. Like they're running a mic cable right down the performance area. So I right. said to him, I said, you know, that's not a good idea. You might want to run a snake around and not run everything straight up and down stage, because that's where right. someone plays. Okay, well, you don't have to get passive aggressive. I said, no, I'm not being passive aggressive.
You're just telling them.
I'm telling
experience.
You, this yeah. is what you don't want to do. And I said, the other thing is we have a rolling riser that's going to be coming across the stage. So you won't want the rolling riser to roll across all the mic cables. Like there's like 10 mic cables.
Right.
And,
oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
I got said, I got called passive aggressive. And I'm like, hey, listen, you know, I'm not passive aggressive. And I hope that you can back me on that one. Because if someone gets on my craw, they're going to catch it. You know,
oh, exactly.
And they will.
And that's the kind of stuff that you don't need, especially in a live setting.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you want to do is have to, you know, fight with your own team
mm-hmm.
when you have to also deal with the artist and deal with the artist's manager and.
Yep. Had a good one today, too. You know. There's a kid standing on the very top of the ladder, the A-frame ladder, and right in front of our boss.
So on top of it, the top rung.
On the very top, like, yeah.
Okay.
You can't step on the first. You can't step on. You can only step on the second bottom rung from the top. Yeah. Like you know what I mean. You can't yeah. step on the very
it's
top.
Not a step.
That's where
it
the
actually
paint
says
goes.
That.
It says
that
right
it says
there.
Not
it's not a step. So yeah. I turn to him. I go, hey, you can't do that. It's the same guy actually that had this thing about with the. And he goes, well, why would you tell me that in front of the boss? I'm like, I tell you that anyways.
It doesn't matter who's around.
And he says to me, he goes, well. If I ignore it, then it's my fault if I fall. I said, no. I said, this guy, my boss, he could get fired if you fall and hurt yourself
yes.
because he's liable. No, because yeah. you're here as a witness to say that I'm going to accept responsibility. I said, duh, it doesn't work that way. Well,
no,
and he said, well,
not.
I took the Work at Heights course just like you, and I'm surprised that you don't know that understanding. I said, yeah, I do. And listen, just don't do that. I said, if you say that you're going to admit that this is a mistake, then you're admitting to me that you're a moron.
Basically,
that's what
everything
saying.
You do now is wrong. And you know that things are wrong. And
you're admitting to me that you're stupid. You know,
exactly.
Whether you're going to fall or not, you're going to take the chance. And the other thing I said, if you do fall, you're not getting workman's comp. So,
because you watched them do it.
Because I told you that you're not supposed to do it that way. And if you fall, then they find out that you've done it. We're operating that wrong. You're done.
Yeah.
So, these are people, some people we work with that don't want to take, these are the millennials. Hey, here we
right,
are.
Right, exactly. It's
That's
weird
a shitty
come back
band,
to that
too,
whole
the millennials.
Thing.
Heard of them? Their first record was crap, the millennials.
No, I haven't.
No, I never heard of them either. I just made that up.
No. That's a good band name, though.
It is good, right? The
it
millennials.
Just really angsty punk rock.
Yeah,
like,
I need constant affirmation. I can drive wherever I want. Do, 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 do. Gonna cut in front of you because I don't care about you. Yeah. I got more.
Hey, listen, that's podcast five right there.
The millennials.
Writing the millennial songs.
All the millennial songs. They used to, I've reached a goal on my Apple Watch. Wait, can't show you. Oh, can't show you anymore. Man. So, yeah, I mean, I like that talk we had.
It was deep. It was pretty, pretty deep. I wasn't expecting us to go that deep.
No, me neither. Honestly, but, no, so you're going to be a dad soon, huh?
I'm going to be a dad, January.
When's January?
Yeah.
Are you getting all those nervy nerve things? Like,
no,
what if
no,
I drop
really.
The baby stuff? Or?
No, actually, you know, the best part about the whole thing was, A, my wife has a younger brother, and she you know, sort of, I don't want to say raised him, because that's not the right way to say it, but she was very involved in when he was younger, so she's going to be an amazing mom, and she knows how to deal with it,
right?
But on top of that, for me to not be nervous is that, you know, with Ty's little ones and Kurt's little ones and Aaron's little ones, that helped me, you know, figure out the things that I need to know. Obviously there's other things I don't know and I won't know until it happens, but it gave me a little pre-run on how to deal with some of the crap that happens, right? You know, literally and figuratively.
You can't prepare yourself. You just rely on the fact that you've been taught some moral things from your family, and you're a stand-up guy, and these are things that you just got to put in your kids. And it hurts. It sucks sometimes. Like, I mean, I brought this example up 100 times. When you're at a restaurant and your kid's there, like, looking in their menu and they're not talking to the person that's serving them, I always, always say, make eye contact with that person. That person is serving you food. Give them a respect that they deserve. And you could see the server kind of goes, oh, wow, that's cool. You know what I mean?
You're not yelling at your children. You're just telling them,
giving
hey,
them.
Guess what?
It's just a little bit of, and I say it wrong, but it's just a little bit of shame. Just a little bit of shame.
It's a little bit of shame. Exactly. And respect. That's a key word.
Oh yeah. Empathy. Putting yourself in other people's shoes. I mean, that's what kind of makes our world work, really, if you think about it, on a big scale. If we all knew each other, but what everybody was thinking, then we would preemptively not do things that would piss other people off, you know?
Right. Exactly.
I guess that's utopia right there.
And you know what? We'll never get there, but at least if you can make your circle, you know, as close as possible, because I mean, at this point in your life, you can surround yourself with the right people. I mean, in high school and in public school or grade school, you know, those are the people that you knew. And don't get me wrong, the people that I was friends with in grade school and high school are awesome people. Mm-hmm. But we kind of grew apart as you know, the topics that we enjoyed are different.
Yeah.
So now I've gravitated towards people where we have the same common goals, but I've also surrounded myself with the best people I can.
Yeah.
And that's and the only way I think to do that is, or for yourself to be happy is to have that positive vibe. You know, things always suck.
Yeah.
But there's always there's always greener grass. Always.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you got to be surrounded by you know, if you're surrounded by shitty people, you're going to be in a shitty mood and you're going to act like a shitty person.
That's right. Cause you just, by example, you think that's normal.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. It's kind of like writing a song, you know, like if everybody's gelling, you're going to write a fantastic song.
Yeah.
You know, the music's going to be on par. The lyrics are going to be amazing. The melody is going to be incredible. But if you're riffing with the other guys in the guys or girls in the band, you're gonna produce shit. and the only reason for that is because you're not in the right mindset. So take that into your sort of overall life goals is, you know, think of it as writing a song every day. You're really trying to make the best of the best song you can every single day that you put your feet on the ground after you get out of bed.
Just remind me of a story. This friend of mine, he had a band and they had a pretty good drummer, and then they decided that the drummer wasn't going to be in the band anymore. He left. It was all a thing, but they got this drummer to play in the band, and it was, you know, I'm not judging sexes, but she was a girl drummer.
Okay.
But not only is she a girl drummer, but she was a shitty drummer first.
Okay.
Okay. So
that's
she
the first
was
thing you should
just
have said,
a shitty drummer. Yeah, just a shitty drummer. So there's a reason why I have to explain this better.
Okay.
So we do one jam and I'm playing bass in this shitty drummed band for like one practice. And so the guy's like, oh, let's do it again. I'm like, and in the room, I'm like, okay, well, that'd be great. Yeah, fun. Woo, it's fun. So much fun. So I end up in confidence. I talk to the guitar player and go, hey, I'm not into this. And, you know, she's not a very good drummer and I'm not going to wait around for her to be a better drummer. And so,
right.
And, you know, I already have to drive across town to do this. And this is something I don't want to do. And no hard feelings. And he's like, yes. So the next time they practice is without me. And she asks, and I say, don't tell her, this is our little secret. Right. So, he told her, obviously, because we were at a party like a week later, and it was literally right around the corner from my house, and I'm going to the bathroom, and she comes out, we meet face to face, she goes, I hear you called me a shitty drummer. And I'm like, and I was sort of dumbfounded, I'm like, yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't want to be in the band, because I don't want to do it, you know, and I'm sorry you took it that way, but she was in my face, I think she wanted to kick my ass. And
wow.
It's a little hot, actually. It was kind of sexy. And the drummer of my band.
So that's
band,
who the picture in your wallet
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the drummer in my band was in the went into the washroom right after she came out. And he was hearing the whole thing, you know, hearing me saying, listen, I have a history with this band. And I've known these guys in the band for so long. And I don't want to come into this with that intention to, you know, unfortunately make you a better drummer. I'm sorry. This is the truth hurts.
Yeah,
and he's in the other side of the door, like laughing hysterically because he's like, "I'm laying it down, right?" But then he came. It felt. You know, there's some maybe a little tension there, little you know, butterfly in the old crotch. It's pretty hot. I don't know why. It was funny though.
Hey, that's another podcast. Right?
That's another podcast. Flutter in the crotch reason.
Flutter in the crotch.
I like their first album, but like... second album wasn't that good. Flutter in the, which is, they just changed it to Flutter after, and it wasn't as good. It got a little weak. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they reproduced it.
Yeah, they're just trying to do Flutter in the crotch region too.
And you can't do that.
You can't do that.
Can't do that. Not everybody can do Smell the Glove.
Check it out. Check it out on YouTube. Flutter in the crotch region. I don't even think crotch is an actual word. That's probably why the grammar police came and said, hey, it's crotch region, okay?
Exactly. But the thing is that the fact that those grammar police came by was the reason why the album didn't do so well, because they actually are very large in the marketing world, where they did this whole campaign telling people about what the right way to say Flutter in the crotch region.
Yeah. And Grammar Police, honestly, their third album was way better than their first album. I thought they were...
Yes.
They had a very strong first couple of songs, and then the record seemed to fall flat after a while.
Was that Sting? No, that wasn't Sting in that band. Sorry. I thought it was maybe Sting. No.
Grammar Police. Okay, Grammar Police were good. Like, they had funny outfits, too. They wore these silly hats that looked like...
Okay.
Yeah. They're like... They had a G with, like, a circle in the cross through. They're called the Grammar Police.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And they wore like a little sign on the top of their head.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. They had props. Props.
I remember
like, who
seeing
has props
this,
at the Rivoli? Really, please.
You know what though? They tried. They tried.
They tried. They tried. That was good. That was a good diatribe. We just he made up bands. That was fun.
Podcast number 6.
Podcast,
making up a band name.
Making
and a
up bands stories. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, that's it. I guess the whole thing is that the take home from that is don't tell your friends in confidence something that you truly believe in that you think is going to be helpful. Because I was trying to get him out of it too.
I see. But so you're trying to piss her off, so she kicked him out.
No, I was trying to tell him to walk away from it too. Because I was trying to explain to him, hey, the record labels, they like the bands to be able to play.
That's huge.
Yeah, and she was pretty easy on the eyes, but I mean, not, you know, to the part, not, I don't know, she wasn't a model, you know.
Well, put her on keyboards or something.
Yeah, that's what emo bands did along. Remember there was that time when all the emo bands, because they couldn't get girlfriends, they got girls to play in the band with them.
Exactly. And they would usually play keys,
other than
maybe something corporate.
Yeah,
I don't know if there was any real piano going on in any of the
corporate. They were a good band. Yeah, they amazing, Spooky Reuben had a keyboard player, girl keyboard player that played with two fingers. it seemed like a thing, like, and all the sexual tension in the van never was productive, you know? So
no, it can't.
It's great for like the first hour until someone had to fart and you're like, oh god, I can't fart, there's a girl in the van.
Yeah, then you realize that she rips one in better than you, and then it's
even just the exact opposite of hot.
And then now you're not attracted to
not
your
at all
bandmate.
Then you go,
and
that
then
one,
you don't have to worry about it.
And then when you say, oh, she's just like a dude, she can, I'm like, okay, well then just go do dudes then, you know, do that.
That was a quick transition.
That was a horrible transition. I'm sorry, my listeners. If I lost a listener on that one, this is all satire, by the way. There was never a band called the Grammar Police, never in the history of anything. Yet, that's true.
There's never a band called the Millennials.
The Millennials. Yet. They only had three albums. They only didn't have four. I made up that fourth album. The Millennials.
Yeah, and because they were already too old. They didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, they were too old, and they just wanted to, like, just wanted to get a job, a safe job, and just, you know, be successful and, like, fucking win. That's what they wanted to do.
Win, W-I-R-N.
Hashtag. Anybody who talks hashtags can F off. I don't like the hashtag.
Backwards hat, polo shirt.
Yeah.
Hashtagging.
Hashtag. We did a Crime Stoppers thing yesterday, and they had like the motivational speakers. Oh my god,
awesome!
It was like the one guy, like this one guy got shot twice in Montreal.
Wow,
you could tell he was a total like baller back in the like the 5 or 10 years ago. He's just like, but he's talking like, you know, like hip hop dude guy, man. And he's like telling
like putting all the slang out.
Yeah, like dog, you know, like dog, you know, like what you know, dog. And then I'm all like, whoa. And it was like this sort of cartoon version of a gangster. Like
it was a Family Guy
safest version of a gangster guy. And and it's so funny because one of the house captains came in to the booth and was listening to the story. I'm like, yeah, this guy got shot twice. She goes, my boyfriend got shot twice before, you know. It's no big deal.
It's part of the job.
It comes to the territory of getting shot. You either get shot once or twice. Both times suck, you know. So you might as well get shot twice, right?
In all honesty, I think I would rather just get shot like 50 Cent as many times as possible.
Nine times. Yeah.
And then just not die. I mean, you can shoot me as much as you want, just as long as I don't die.
His joke to the 50 Cent joke was, yeah, he got shot like 9 times, so my friends started calling me 25 Cent.
Oh, dad jokes.
And the thing is, the only reason the students are there is because they can get out of school. Like, and I'm in the booth watching all what's happening. And like, I think the show's in the back row where everybody's just like, oh, fuck, what's going on? When's lunch?
There's more light from the crowd from their cell phones than there is on the stage.
Yeah. And they, it was one of those like, really? Oh my god, I guess we need to tell people, like, bring them all to like 8 or 9 schools, come to the same venue and talk about violence. And I don't know, I feel so tuned out. I feel like for us it would be some guy would come to our gymnasium, you know,
yeah,
Indomitable Spirit Band would come and say, hey, you don't need to do drugs. Drugs are bad. You know, that kind of thing.
And you'd be right into it, right?
Yeah. Because... I mean, I don't want to do drugs. Yeah, don't do drugs.
Yeah. Screw drugs.
Drugs are bad. You know, we had actually a band. I forgot what their songs were. I made up that song. That wasn't real. But there was one of these bands that came through my high school, and they were like touring. Like, they all wore like bright shirts. Like, one guy had a bright orange shirt, the other guy had a bright yellow shirt, and then in the close, they were like a rock band, and they had the closest thing I could sort of explain that. You ever seen Mr. Show, Indomitable Spirit, where they all have like physical disabilities? It was that without the physical disabilities, like, you know what I mean? Like,
okay.
My favorite part of that skit was Sarah Silverman going, "I'm Sarah, I'm a woman." And there was a drummer. The drummer was, I can't remember his name, but he played with his, he had no body. That was his physical ailment. So he just played with his mouth, with sticks in his mouth. Or he played guitar, or he played the flute, just a head that played the flute. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Sarah Silverman was perfectly fine, but she was the woman. And it was just this awkward quietness. And they were like, that is the funniest stuff ever. Oh, man. Did you ever see the Netflix with Bob and David?
I watched some of it, and
it's weird,
and
huh?
to the fans that are out there, it wasn't what I expected.
It was everything I thought it was going to be.
Oh, really?
Everything.
See, those guys are incredibly, incredibly hilarious. I don't know. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I was in the wrong mood to watch it.
It's just weird.
Yeah. I guess it went past British humor. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was beyond, it was beyond old Greg. You know?
Did you ever get into the series though? Like the HBO series that came out in the 90s?
No.
Because that was brilliant. They stole from Monty Python, essentially. Because they would do skit, would go into each skit. So the ending of one skit would start the next skit. And that was sort of the magic of how they... And they basically stole Flying Circus, Monty Python's Flying Circus. It is dark as hell. Like, man, what a great... I think they only did 4 or 5 seasons or something. But it was... it's so good. So good.
Was it... What was it called then?
It was called Mr. Show with... It was just called Mr. Show with Bob and David. And it was, I still, there was times I was on tour and we were like, could afford the luxury of having a TV in the van. And that's all we watched was Mr. Show on VHS. And, we put the TV in between the two front seats and, I would drive across America sometimes by myself in this van, and I would push the thing forward so I could see the TV while I'm driving.
That's amazing.
I know. So dangerous. But
that's middle America.
Yeah, I was just driving across.
But the open road.
Open road. Yeah, me and the van. Yeah. Good times. Did you guys ever play down that way? You played in L.A., right? You flew down there. They're like aristocrats.
Yeah. Yeah, we aristocrated the shit out of that.
Did you go ever do any road tours? Like travel?
Not long ones, no. No, yeah. It was...
It really makes a band. Makes and breaks a band.
Makes, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, if you can hang out with each other for that long and not be super mad, then...
Then you're going to be okay.
You'll be all right, you know? Yeah, yeah, man, I toured in vans for a very long time, and I learned a lot of things, and it comes back to that guy calling me passive aggressive, because it's like, I can't understand. I'm just trying to be nice. This is me
right,
being nice.
Right, because you could have answered that
I could
way
have
worse.
Shamed the crap out of him. I could have said,
yeah,
hey,
exactly.
This is stupid. Why are you doing it this way, donkey?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I didn't want to hurt his feelings. So, but he said, you're being passive aggressive. I'm like, no.
Yeah. Don't start with me. Don't go
Don't start. Yeah. Yeah. So, it's tough to be on the point when you know whoever's receiving what you're telling them could be offended by it. Where when I was first starting in this business, if someone said, no, do it that way, whether it's right or wrong, you did it that way. Yeah. And, you know, unless it became super dangerous, but I was never in any life-threatening things when things are getting hung in the air and somebody's doing something. It was done that way. When everybody got opinions and found out different ways to do it. And I agree. When I worked in that university and someone say, this is a better way to work your computer. Like, oh my God, thank you.
Yes.
That's me saying thank you. When I tell that person how to operate a table saw and I cut the thumb off, they're looking at me like, oh, okay, old man. It's like, man,
right.
There you go.
And it's all about the safety portion of it. Like, you know, guys like yourself have been around long enough to know that if you stand underneath the hang as it's going in the air, there is a potential that hang could come down. So you don't stand underneath it.
As unlikely as it would be.
It doesn't matter the end, right? But but that's the point, is that
you're showing example too. And you know, even that today with the standing on the ladder on the top of the thing is like, no, I got to tell you, you're doing that wrong. And if you admit to me, you need to realize you're probably not going to fall. You're probably not going to hurt yourself, but you're showing people around you the incorrect way of doing things. And that's not what we do.
Right.
We don't do that.
No, exactly. And in reality, like, how long has he been going up and down ladders in that theater?
He's a rigger.
That's even worse.
Yeah. No, I know. And that's the other thing I said, you know, I didn't say it, but he should know better. You know, go get the right size ladder.
Yeah. You know, some of the oldest road dogs who are riggers are the safest people on the planet because they're still around because they did that.
And they've been scared shitless by things that they've done. Yeah.
fucking right. They might have lost fingers. They might have, you know, came close to everything. But, you know, they have the experience back to, they have the experience. So learn from the experience, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no point in acting like you know more than somebody that's been there longer. It's that it's still like hierarchy still exists. It doesn't need to be a tyrant.
No,
you know, it doesn't need to be a tyranny or tyranny, however you say that.
Yeah. No, I've worked with people who have been my boss that I would walk off a cliff for. And I've also worked for people who are my boss who I have absolutely no faith. I know their agenda has nothing to do with me. I've worked with those people too.
Right.
And I'm torn where I sit now. You know what I mean? So
I think that if you don't look at the positive side of it, you become a grumpy old sound guy.
Yeah. You could easily become a grumpy old sound guy at this place. And that's what scares me the most is I don't want to be doing 330 shows a year anymore.
Right. Exactly. And you have the ability to say no to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I, you know, if this message gets driven home to anywhere, is that it's like, yeah, I've done it long enough where I could probably just do it on my own. You know, I could go back on tour, you know, I could do whatever the fuck I want, you know, and because right. I've been doing it so long. But there's right. not a lot of people who are 22 that can hold that over people, you know what I mean?
Well, you shouldn't. You don't have the experience.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you may think you do, but Jesus.
I know. Allegedly.
Yeah.
No,
The other guy. The other guy we had on the.
Was speaking like left. That was dumb guy. Dumb guy talking about his career on a podcast that literally, you know, tens of people are listening to.
You got to get the message out, man.
Got to get that message out. Hey, anybody want to hire a sound guy? I do laundry. I could drive a van. You need something delivered somewhere? You call me. I'm coming over there.
You make amazing coffee.
I do. That's my strong. So, I could be a barista. I could be a barista on Queen Street because I saw a few of those guys.
Traveling barista.
Mm. Come to your house, make coffee for you. It's a new service.
In the morning. Yeah.
Are you thirsty? Yeah. Do you like coffee? Yeah. Well, you need me to come over and make coffee for you, but I got a coffee machine. Yeah, you don't want that stuff to light on fire.
Exactly.
It catches on fire. Dangerous. Did you know?
You don't know how to use
that. One out of every 2 million coffee machines explode. I bet you didn't know that statistic.
I didn't know it was so high. I can't believe. You know what I'm going to do, Simon? Mm. I'm going to go and throw my coffee machine out today.
Before you make sure you piss in it first, so no one else can use it, because we got to make sure that coffee machine is as furthest away as possible. And then I'll come over tomorrow. I'll make you the best damn cup of coffee. I'll wake you up with a little smooch on your cheek.
Oh, yes. Yes. So are you a beans guy? You start with the beans?
Yeah, I like the beans. I don't like the grind. I think the grind is a bit of, you know, it's a bit of a cheat. Actually, I got to ask that for this company. I hit up a company to see if they wanted to support the show, sponsor the show. And they're like, no, we're not doing that anymore. But what kind of bean you like? I'm like, what? What do you like? You know, like a grind? Do you like a whole bean? I'm like, I think I like whole bean because I can grind it as long or as less as I want.
Exactly.
So they sent me this coffee. It was Death Wish coffee.
Ooh.
And it was damn good coffee. It's really good coffee. Yes. I wish I could have a coffee company support this show.
That would be amazing. Anybody out there that's listening that owns a coffee company or knows somebody that does.
Come on in.
Call in, email.
Yeah.
Just show up at Simon's house whenever you feel like it.
Just bring me
Nobody knows where I live, so it's okay.
Yeah, because I'm starting this business now where I ride around on a 10-speed with a coffee and I just bring it to your house. I'm starting it off in my hometown, obviously. You know.
It might be cold as hell because you're just going to knock on everybody's door until they want it.
Yeah.
But hey,
I'm here. You were here yesterday. There. I know, but you drink coffee every day. That's what we call a renewable resource, right?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I just keep coming back and make coffee for you.
Exactly. You know what? If all else fails, that is a fail-safe plan.
You're right. And yes. I could work at Walmart, but they won't hire me at Walmart. They didn't.
As a greeter?
They don't do greeters anymore, man.
Really?
Not my Walmart.
Crazy. The Walmart in my hometown had a fire the other day. That's crazy.
Well, caught on small fire. Town,
so, yeah, I don't know, something about boxes or somebody was probably smoking a joint in the back or something. Who knows?
Did you know that Walmart has the most efficient distribution network in the world?
Makes sense. I completely agree with that.
They have such efficient trade or distribution that their warehouses are something like half the size of what it should be if it was running like a FedEx or like a normal trucking company. They're so efficient with their product that it's everywhere and everywhere, no problem. And every truck is full. Like, they actually should be winning awards for like and teaching people how to do this method of keeping, because they're saving money by having full trucks driving around. That's one good thing about Walmart, I guess. I don't know. You can get like a TV for $600.
You can get some Lee jeans for $15.
Lee jeans, and they sell their own brand of work shoes or work pants called George.
Yes, George brand.
George brand.
It used to be called the 725 brand. If you want some Walmart history, I can fill you in.
Did you work at Walmart?
I did, for a very long time.
Get out of here! Wow.
Yep.
I'm surprised, really.
It was my first like real job. I had some other jobs like when I was 15 and 16 mm-hmm. years old, but then grade 9 I went to Walmart, and actually the best thing about it was that they actually allowed me to take time off to like, you know, do shows and do some runs here and there. So it was really awesome. And I, you know, I would take 4 months off and then I would come back and they would still, you know, bring me back and stuff. So there, I mean, I'm sure things have gone to shit since I've been there, but it was fun, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's good having an open-ended career, right? To serve your own needs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it taught me a whole lot about interacting with other humans because...
Oh, I bet.
Sometimes the Walmart shopper is not always the most cordial shopper, if you will. As Walmart.com or people of Walmart.com would state. So it was a learning experience. I worked there for too long, but here I am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, we all, you know, you need a job. You got to do stuff. Like I played in a band with a guy who was trying to be an investment banker, like investment guy, I mean, and you can't do that unless you're in full, you know, whole hog. You know, so he'd get a job as an intern and then not make any money and then have to quit to go on tour for a month and then try to find another job somewhere. And, you know, he just gave it up. Now he does that. And, you know, you need a job, right? You know, it's unfortunate that, like, you know, this conversation comes up a lot in this show is, you know, what do you do now? Like, what did you do before? And what have you gathered from that past that you take into the future, you know, the good stuff. And a lot of people have normal jobs, you know, they'll have jobs, whether it be artistic jobs or they'll have a trade or something that keeps them busy. But they feel the art part of it is something that feeds the need to keep doing this kind of dumb job to keep them from going crazy, you know, the balance, right?
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, like you said, you can't be an investment banker and be on the road.
No.
Just that sort of balance doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that's and some of those jobs are really flexible and really great to their employees, and I hope that it's still like that there. I don't know. I haven't really talked to anybody that's still there, but you know, anybody that's listening to this who may see this come up on their feed and Facebook, you can call me or email me and tell me how things are over there.
Yeah, get caught up on Walmart. Like, oh, did you know the Ethel and George?
Oh my,
they're in the back room doing blow.
Yes.
That probably never happened.
Well, I mean, who knows? Because Ethel, she was a stone cold fox, that Ethel.
Yeah. Don't let the name fool you.
Nope. No, exactly.
She might have old granny name, but she's pretty hot.
She had a 20-year-old libido and 80-year-old brain. So
that's right.
Nothing wrong with that.
Ethel.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
What is like do people name kids Ethel anymore? Is there going to be a movement of kids that are named like old timey names?
Like Beertrick? It's weird. I had this discussion recently with somebody about names. I mean, my wife and I aren't obviously going to divulge the name of our child until she's born.
Is it going to be Fuckface McBoltknob?
That's why I put that up there. It's actually rings off the tongue really nicely. Right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's tough to put on a driver's license though.
Well, I mean, you know, too bad. That's how I say it. We can short it up to
just go, hey,
to
fuck face. Yeah, just fuck face. Fuck face.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off there. But
I don't know where I was going
anyways.
You're
talking about names.
Yeah, we were talking about that, and I think that old-timey names, they've stood the test of time. And I think, I mean, what the hell do I know? But they're coming back. You know, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with having a,
sure.
a strong,
like Florence.
Older
Florence is a rad name.
Elizabeth and yeah. Hazel and there's nothing wrong with those names now. You know,
yeah.
Though my mother would beg to differ. However, yeah,
Ethel.
I think
Ethel.
Ethel's a good one.
Ethel.
It kind of sounds. I don't know if you say it fast enough.
Yeah.
If I think that the children on the playground would not be so.
Yeah, hey,
Athol.
What are some other old-timey names? Norman.
Yeah, for dudes, yeah, Norman.
Norman.
And
Norm. And who? Frank?
Philip. Frankie.
Yeah.
Charles.
No, we got to get rid of Dakotas. I'm sorry if you're naming your child Dakota.
No.
But we don't need any more Dakotas. We don't need any more Phoenixes.
Is it Phoenix Eye? If that's plural for phoenixes,
we don't need any more names of Phoenix.
Okay.
See where I went there? See how I did that?
I did. Yeah, that was eloquent. Actually.
Thank you. We don't need. Oh gosh, there's so many out there. There's these new timey names. They just. It's yeah.
Seven. I like seven.
Seven. I picked out names that couldn't be shortened.
Yes. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't get Ev?
They do now, but I'm like, really? Yeah. Really?
They're stretching it.
My daughter's April. So that's an old-timey name. Like,
it is
an old-timey name. Yeah. April, you can't call her Ape.
No, because that's weird.
AP.
And Rill is weird.
Really?
Too.
Really?
But yeah, it's so weird how important the thought process is. To think about all the shitty things that kids will say on the playground. And you have to think about that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like Julia Gulia. Come on.
Yeah. My wife's name's Spring. She kept her last name for obvious reasons, so she wouldn't be Springhead. Even on the playground. That would be bad. In the workplace. Hello, it's Springhead calling. Boing, boing.
I didn't even put two and two together.
Yeah.
Now I'm dumb guy.
Yeah. Yeah, duh, obvious. Yeah, so she kept her last name, which is fine. Which is great. I mean, because I don't want people. I have a weird last name, really, if you think about it. My buddy Darren, when we were trying to name our Everett, his name, he came up with a name and I wanted it. It was called Bronikin, and it's Yiddish, and it's old, like Bronikin. That's a solid,
pretty strong
author's
pretty strong name.
Yeah, like yeah. Bronikin Head. Just like, rah, fuck be, you.
You'd be afraid. And he would probably be in an Alice Cooper cover band.
He could have age of 12. He'd have a beard.
And I would
a pipe,
say so.
And a pipe. And he'd be smoking a pipe and he'd be writing books on an old-timey typewriter.
Typewriter.
In
no,
Starbucks.
No, no. He would. What's the.
I got a deadline. See? What?
the little quill, the
dab 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 dab. Oh no, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say he'd be a monk from like, but he would be like, yeah, but he'd have like the hat with the feather in it, and like and the press or something. Bronikin Head reporting live from Egypt. Back to you. Wow, that's the youngest 12-year-old badass, like, you know, Bronikin Head.
He'd be walking around with a portable reel to reel, taking interviews of people. Like, he's just so badass.
We have iPods now. Don't, you know? No, you got to do it the right way. Say
that's it's the best sound.
No,
it's the best sound. Say
it's just warm. Say
yeah.
And he'll be solving crimes too. Bronikin Head on the job. Bronikin Head.
But he's one of those guys that he's a true detective. He's a private eye, if you will, where he just runs by his own accord. Right? He's like a Watson.
No time for backup.
Exactly.
Did you ever see, speaking of TV, did you ever see the Bored to Death series with Jason Schwartzman?
I did. Yeah, it was really good.
Oh, there was only, what, two seasons? That was really good.
Yeah, maybe three. Maybe
three.
I don't know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but early Zach Galifianakis.
Yes, and he
Ted
was incredible.
Danson, Ted Danson. He was
Ted
the
Danson
stoner
awesome.
Guy that owned the New Yorker. And the premise is that he just decided he wanted to be, instead of a writer, wanted to be a private eye. That's what, and it's actually based on because he wanted to make money. Yeah, it's a true story.
I heard about that. Yeah,
the guy who wrote the book, Bored to Death, was that was the tales of his. Yeah, no, that was great. I wish because I'm a big Jason Schwartzman fan. Period. I think he's a genius.
He doesn't get enough credit, does he?
No, he's a good drummer too. Eh?
Was it really?
Yeah. What was
that.
His band called? They had that single California.
No,
California, here we come. It'll come to me. Somebody should pipe in and see what it is. You'd know the song if I played it for you. Oh well, coming up the 101, California, here we come.
Who else was in the band?
It was him and other guys. Like that was his passion, like his sort of little pet project that he did, and it became a thing. And actually, Mitchell Froom, who did all like the early Crowded House stuff, he produced their album. So that's how I got into it. Yeah. So Mitchell Froom produced the album. The song's California, and it's I can't name it now. I'm out of steam.
The unfortunate thing is that song title's been overdone so many times. Yeah. It's gonna be impossible to find it. I guess you can just type in Jason Schwartzman and that will work. Right?
Yeah, band or something. Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman. Yeah. It's hard to say.
Schwartz. I can't say it anymore. Well, hey man, I should let you go. We should do this more. I enjoy talking to you. I think we have a kindred spirit of sorts.
I agree.
Your mic sounds fantastic on this podcast, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I got to get me an SM7. I got the stand. Yes, the cool stand. Do you have the cool stand?
I don't have that radio stand. That's an amazing cool stand. I have an old, terrible, creaky mic stand, boom stand that has seen better days, but it holds the mic up. That's all that matters. So I did some digging here before we go.
Yeah.
That he was the drummer in the band Phantom Planet.
That was right. Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
And it was, it was the theme song from the TV series, The OC.
Oh, ooh. That's right. Yeah. 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 I remember. Crazy. That. Yeah. I think they had one single and it was out around that time. That song, The Way. Made up
by Fastball.
Minds. By Fastball, yeah.
Yeah, Fastball.
That's around that time. That came out.
I did not know that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because I know the name. I'd have to hear the song, but I know the name Phantom Planet, but I didn't know Jason Schwartzman was in that band.
He's the drummer.
Things you learn every day.
There you go, right? Yeah. Well, hey man, let's end it off. Anytime, let's do this again. Maybe, you know, you're episode number 110, you're episode number 100, and then before then, in the car, you didn't do much talking because you were in the front seat. It was more of a Justin DeVries and me drinking Bush in the back of the back of the Durango.
In the Durang.
Durang, yeah, the Desco Durango.
So, Desco Durango.
Okay, Smart Guy, Anytime. Dumb Guy podcast. Hitting the airwaves
coming to
soon.
The streets.
Coming to the streets.
Yep.
Okay, buddy. Yep. Let me hit
I'm
start.
In. Thank you very much. Had a great time.
That was my friend, Greg Bolton. Greg Bolton, thank you so much for doing this show. It was fun. It was fun talking to Greg. Greg, we didn't conquer anything, but we had a good time talking. Greg is a good guy to talk to, and I suggest everybody talks to Greg Bolton. Because he's a good guy. Thanks so much for listening to the show, everybody. I really had a good time. And we will talk to you next week. And I don't know who's on the show next week because I don't have anybody lined up. So, and it actually is coming up on the second year of podcasting. So maybe I should put together a best of again and do what I did last year. I think it was around this time last year I did that. I've been very busy at work. I'm just finishing. I finished off on a musical. I was mixing a musical for the past week and a bit. And that's done. That's all zipped up. We just got to drop their truck off tomorrow. And that is the end of them until March. Okay, everybody. We'll see you next week. I'll be here. Bye.